For our beautiful harbour you've never seen, like Aukite Falls, the Narrows, or Shagtree, or head across the bar to the open coast. Go to raglanboatcharters.co.nz to learn more about Wakahuia or to book a trip.
Raglan Fish is giving away corn fritters all through winter. If you order a meal deal online or in person, Monday to Friday, you'll get a corn fritter for free. All you need to do is order a meal deal via the link on the Raglan Fish Facebook page or head on down to the wharf at the end of Wallace Street to make your order. See you at the wharf.
Raglan Community Radio supports the Code of Broadcasting Practice for the broadcasts of its radio programs. If you hear something you find offensive or intentionally misleading on our station, you have the right to complain. A formal complaint about a specific program or incident must be made within 20 days of broadcast of that program to Raglan Community Radio, PO Box 126, Raglan.
Raglan Community Radio 98.1, the best in the West.
And kia ora, good evening, whangaroa and Raglan. You're finding it the best in the West this evening. You're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio, Rangyo Whangaroa, at 9 minutes past six. 9 minutes later it should be, but not as late as sometimes and not as early as sometimes, but so let's see how we go anyway. So as usual, start off looking at the weather. So the weather looks like it's probably going to be dry for the next 3 or 4 days. Maybe even longer, maybe through till Monday, I think. Looking at the temperatures, probably dropping down to about 7 as a minimum over the next few days, 19 as a maximum, around about 16 degrees at the moment. And the temperature tonight is supposed to drop down to around about 9 degrees, and so not quite as cold as tomorrow night when it's supposed to be down to that 7, but quite cool this evening. In fact, all the evenings this week are going to be quite cool, around about, well, 7's the lowest, but then it goes 8, 9, 8, 8, 8, so not all that warm. We're still only in spring. And not much rain around, though. So it seems we've had most of the rain we're going to have for a while. Maybe come back next week. The wind's supposed to die down as well. It has been a southwesterly of 25 knots. Pressure's gone up, which maybe indicates that rain's moving away fairly well. So 1,025 hectopascals. Sea's still got a reasonable swell to it, southwest swell of 3 meters. The next high tide will be 25 past nine tonight. Next one we'll see in daylight will be 5 to 10 tomorrow morning, both 3.3 meter tides as we're heading towards the full moon. So they can get slightly bigger. And the days, of course, still getting steadily longer. So 6:33 now for a sunrise, which is 9 minutes earlier than when I spoke to you last week. And for a sunset, we've got an hour and a half or so to go, to 22 minutes to eight, which is 5 minutes more daylight in the evening than we had last week. So that's the weather. Looking at what's on this week, as usual, we've got Trivia Night on tonight at the Harbour View Hotel, 7 o'clock. And we've got the, as usual, Raglan Ramblers going rambling tomorrow. Not doing quite the usual rambling thing, going to actually have a look at the Tomato School Agricultural Day, and then go and walk over a farm just to the south of Tomato. And go and have a look at that. So it's sort of based around Tomato, usual time and place to meet, which is 9 o'clock near the Catholic Church on James Street, down towards Wallace Street. And I say the weather looks like it should be quite reasonable for all these things which are happening over the next few days. So the Raglan Rambles are starting at 9 o'clock. The actual ag day at Tomato School starts at 10 o'clock. Then there's one at Tiuku, same time, 10 o'clock on Thursday, and same time, 10 o'clock on Friday for Raglan Area School. So they're all having their ag days this week. Also on Thursday, Soulscape's got a full moon ecstatic dance and sauna. So that's when we've got full moon. So that's 6:30 on Thursday. Moving on to the weekend, let's have a look. We've got Stranded Pearl being shown at the old school on Stewart Street. It's the weekend when the old school shows films. So we've got three films as usual. First one, as I say, Stranded Pearl, 5 o'clock on Saturday, about a Cook Islands romance. And they're also going to have the director, Ken Khan, along there to do a Q&A session, question and answer session. So that's 5 o'clock on Saturday at the old school on Stewart Street. Then in the 7, actually I haven't written the time down, I think 7, maybe 7:30, need to check. The Road to Patagonia, which they've shown several times. This is where strangers change when they cross paths on a surfing adventure. So I don't know whether it's going to be the last time they showed it, showing this one, but it's certainly been shown several times at the old school so far this year. Then it's the third Sunday of the month, so it's Crop Swap, 9:30 onwards at the Bowling Club on James Street, to take your surplus veggies and fruits and such like along and swap them for other people's surplus. The other third film which is being shown this weekend is a new one, at least new one for the old school. It's called Marguerite's Theorem, and it's about a maths lecturer who somebody finds a flaw in her thesis, and she's dismissed for being too emotional. So the film centres around that sort of theme. Called Marguerite's Theorem, and it's at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon at the old school on Stewart Street. The old school's also got Rangatahi Clay workshops, 6 weeks of workshops starting at 5:30 on Monday. Need to book for that one. It's $180 for the 6 weeks. And the last thing I've got down next Tuesday is there's another working bee at the community garden on Wainera Street from 3 o'clock next Tuesday. So that's a fairly short list of things which I've spotted which are on this week. Of course, we've got all the usual things which are on, so I don't know if it's any help maybe to go through, for example, what's happening tomorrow. So there's the usual relatively long list of things happening tomorrow. I keep mentioning that they're all on our website, Raglan Community Radio, or raglanradio.com rather. We are Raglan Community Radio, but our website's called raglanradio.com. And there, if you click on the What's On tab, you'll find a list of things for the week. And looking at what it says for the week on Wednesday, it says Raglan Knitting, so that's happening at Orca from 9 o'clock. Raglan Ramblers, I've already mentioned, that's 9 o'clock also. Near Dance with Belinda, Raglan Arts Weekend Preview Exhibition, it's been on for a few days now and carries on through to the next weekend. It would help if I was looking at the 15th rather than the 23rd. Just check that all those things are on. Yeah, they're all on as usual. Koha Kai at the community house at midday, where they've also got Justice of the Peace there at 1 o'clock. Freedom to Fly They're going to be doing a show soon. They're based on Bow Street. The Raglan Theatre Academy, they're meeting at 3:30 on Wednesday, tomorrow. The ukulele group, Ragtimers, gets together on Wednesdays at 4 o'clock at the old school. And there's kids karate at 4:30. Pizza special at the Harbour View Hotel from 5 o'clock tomorrow evening. The old school's got clay members night. That's from 5 o'clock. The Raglan Club has their members draw tomorrow night from 6 o'clock, or at 6 o'clock. The book club meets at the Stone and Cow, the cafe on Bow Street, at 6 o'clock also tomorrow night. And also at 6 o'clock tomorrow night, the Yard Muso open mic night is on. 7 o'clock, the men's group, men's circle, so they're meeting as well. So, as I say, have a look at our raglanradio.com What's On page if you're interested in those, and you'll find similar sorts of lists for each day of the week. But it is quite a long list to go through, so usually I pick out just the things which change each week, or the things which aren't on every week, or even every day in some cases. So that's the things which are on this week. Looking at what has been happening this week, the council's been holding a number of meetings. One of them was what they call an aerodrome workshop, Raglan Aerodrome Workshop. There hasn't been any news on this for a long time, and it looks as though they're finally deciding that they're going to put the closure of Raglan Aerodrome onto the long-term plan, which we'll see coming out around about April next year. And the plan says that they're going to continue to manage the reserve as an aerodrome until at least 30th of June 2025. So that's 30th of June next year. Is the earliest that the aerodrome might close, and that the land would therefore be handed back to the Apu who owned it before 1941. You might remember that in 1941, well, before 1941, back in the late 1930s, the ministry was looking at where to put airfields. They were gearing up to have a war with Germany at that time. Germany and Japan. Not sure. It probably was obvious that it was coming from Japan as well, because there were quite a number of reports in the newspapers at that time saying we're sending all our scrap to Japan, and some people were saying it's going to come back to us as bullets. There was that thought in the 1930s, both to revive the world economy, which of course had been in a deep recession in the late 1920s. That was when the hunger marches and all those things happened. By the late 1930s, they were looking at going to war again. Of course, they'd only finished war in 1918, the First World War. And the Second World War came along in 1939. And it took a couple of years before they got round to putting their action plan for the Raglan airfield into action. They then compulsorily purchased, I'm not sure whether they purchased or just took the land at the aerodrome. There was a promise they were going to give it back after the war, but instead of that, they maintained the aerodrome. And when they got rid of part of the aerodrome, they handed it over to the golf club. And that's when the protests started, when the golf club was about to excavate one of the Urupa, one of the burial grounds. And some people didn't think that was a good idea. So the protests about it started then in the mid-1970s, and pretty much been going on ever since. And finally now, possibly in 2025, the land is going to be handed back to those original families who owned it. I think there's a boundary about halfway down the airfield, so it doesn't all belong to the same Apu. There was a workshop on that. If you're interested in some of the historic details, it's quite a good presentation of them in the agenda for that workshop. Have a look at the council's website, have a look at the meetings, and have a look at the aerodrome workshop, which was on the 9th of October. And as I say, we'll be going to see that coming up in the long-term plan. There was supposed to be a long-term plan this year, but in fact the long-term plan got delayed. They weren't sure at that time. Well, still aren't too sure what's going to happen with the waters. Hopefully by the time they get round to producing the long-term plan for consultation in round about March, April next year, that will be rather clearer. They're doing lots of consultation on it at the moment. So that's going to be coming up. We're also going to be hearing from the mayor as to some of those problems. So that's an interview that Aaron did on Friday, I think it was. So the mayor had some things to say about that. So maybe I'll say a bit more after we've listened to that one. We've also got the some more figures about the census. Figures came out at the beginning of the month, but Roger's put some more figures on the Raglan 23 website, and I've not managed to work out where he got them from, but he's managed to find the figures on income, and says that past censuses showed incomes in Raglan lower than the national median, but slightly higher than the surrounding areas. But in 2023, Rangitahi had a median income in the highest. That's the $55,900 a year or more bracket, with Lorenzen Bay close behind, with $49,800 a year, up to that $55,900. And most of Raglan with a median income, though, of less than $36,700. $36,700 a year. Does note that the Māori usually resident population is unchanged in Raglan, with the 2023 count at 996 as in 2018. But as I mentioned last week, in Whale Bay, there was an increase from 270 to 309. And in Tiuku from 366 to 465. As I say, I've not worked out where Roger got the figures from, because all I could find were the area 2 figures. Roger seems to have found the area 1 figures, and I'm not quite sure where he found them. But next time I see him, I must ask. Moving on to one of the other stories that was in the news in the last week. And that's the council looking for feedback. So the heading says community halls or hubs of financial stress. And this is another story that Roger's put together on the Raglan 23 website, saying that community halls like Raglan Town Hall are vital local hubs. But if Waikato District ratepayers want them maintained to a standard, they may soon need additional targeted rates. A council survey about 3 halls not in Raglan warns that our hall committees may propose targeted rate increases for other halls, which might include Raglan. And if significant changes are proposed, we will ask you about them. So Roger suggests it may pay to do the survey as an indication of your views, as Raglan Town Hall, Tomato Hall and Tiako Hall may be included in the rate increase. I think also includes the old school as well, so those aren't the only halls in the area. The council's working on its next long-term plan, which, as I mentioned, is going to include the airfield. Feedback will help decide where rates should focus over the next 9 years. Mentions that council owns 33 community halls, and their general manager of service delivery, Megan May, says they're managed by volunteer local committees or by the council, and funding comes from targeted rates. Each committee takes care of bookings, repairs, and keeping the hall in good condition. And the ones they are consulting on a Eureka Hall over the other side of the district that was built in the late 1960s and needs significant maintenance. And the targeted rate for the hall has not been increased since 2015. And the committee running that one's proposed that they raise the rate from $35 to $60. So that's the sort of increase I think that Roger's saying we might have to look at. Council says they want to know if the community supports that. And another hall is Ruawaro Hall, just to the west of Huntley. That's been closed since April 2023 after a seismic assessment. And the hall committee has disbanded, and there's been an asbestos survey and a roof report, and they show that significant investment is needed. And they want to, council wants to know whether to repair, demolish, build a new hall, or use the land for another community purpose, or sell the site. So they're all options they're looking at. And there's also the Huntley War Memorial Hall. They've formed a committee, and the hall's been renovated, and an $8 targeted charge was introduced to help cover the ongoing maintenance. But after a year and a half of operation, additional funding is needed, and that could increase from $8 to $25. We simply can't afford to do everything, says Megan, the manager. All feedback is valuable and will guide council on how to much to invest in services, including halls and services like roading, waste and libraries. And of course, you can look at that online, and we've got another 5 days to do that. So shapewaikato district.govt.nz, long-term plan engagement is the title of it. But have a look at the council's website and you'll find the Say It tab up at the top. Go to there and you'll see where it is. One of the other proposals in there, which is also covered by Roger on Raglan 23, he's been busy this week, says that council wants to do another $200,000 traffic light trial. This is the one I mentioned last week as well, but Roger's got some interesting takes on it. Like some years ago, council carried out a traffic light trial on Wainui Road's one-lane bridge across the Opotoru estuary. The trial failed when a few Raglanites pushed the lights into the estuary. After getting set for another traffic light trial, the council says it's paused that one based on the feedback from Raglanites on the current annual plan. But Roger's comment is that they're always keen to spend ratepayers' money. So even though a trial would have no match funding from government and would increase rates, council is once again asking if you'd like to spend $200,000 and go ahead with the trial. One lane bridge operates on a courtesy give way system, and throughout most of the year it works smoothly. However, during peak season, some drivers experience brief waits to cross, and council receives a number of complaints. And their report actually says it's a maximum of 2 minutes to wait. So I don't know whether anyone's ever waited more than 2 minutes, but maybe 2 minutes seems a long time, I suppose, when you're sat doing nothing. And there was also a story from the Raglan Chamber of Commerce, where Raglan and Waikato Chambers of Commerce, saying that they formed a partnership through shared membership from the beginning of this month, offering Raglan members access to the Waikato Chamber services. And it's a 12-month trial, and it will allow Raglan members to enjoy similar rights and benefits to their Waikato Chamber members, including access to region-wide events and business support. Waikato Chamber Chief Executive Don Good said that the part of the trial would be planning Raglan-centric events to drive economic growth and community resilience, addressing issues such as infrastructure and housing affordability. Raglan Chamber co-chair Steve Phillips said our members will benefit from the expanded resources. The initiative comes back on the back of the Waikato Chamber taking a more active role in South Waikato and Coromandel. So they're gradually drawing them all together. By collaborating with business communities around the region, our members are benefiting from increased networking opportunities, access to local resources and knowledge, and the opportunity for market expansion and increased viability, visibility. And the next to the last story I've spotted is about the Raglan Country and Blues Music Festival coming not this weekend, but next weekend, Labour Weekend, together with the Arts Weekend, Raglan Arts Weekend, RAW. And so the Midge Marsden Band, Midge Marsden fame, who's now 79 years old and was a long-time Raglan resident and stalwart of the town's entertainment scene. He did much to nurture the Whangaroa area's creative talent and transform the place into a veritable mecca for musicians. So this is a story from Waikato Times. And his return to the Harbourview Hotel on the, a week on Sunday is a notable event, well known for the track Travelling On, featuring blues superstar Stevie Ray Vaughan, and written by Murray Grindley. It was recorded and filmed for a TV commercial for Europa Oil in 1987. His biggest commercial success came with the release of the Burning Rain album, and the single in 1990 when he was voted Entertainer of the Year. And that next weekend, on the weekend after next, rather, there's going to be also the James Ray Band, Mojo Masters, Trenwith's, Penny Feather, Fred Moe, Hurricane Shane, Wills, Handsome Giants, Ashwin Knox Trio, and other Raglan artists. So they're going to be playing at various places, including the Congregational Church, Yulo's, the Old School, and it says that the festival's the brainchild of Dave Mabey and Ray Diprose to provide evening entertainment for the arts festival goers. And any profits will be put into assisting Raglan's younger artists. And there'll also be some free concerts, including a ukulele band at the Growers Market. That's happening every Friday, but Friday after next from 5 p.m. there'll be a ukulele band and buskers performing in the streets on all 3 days of the Labour Weekend. And for the ticketed events, you can look at humantics.com. And the last story, as usual, is to look at what the COVID statistics are looking like. And they have been going down fairly steadily, but they're back up a bit again this week, well, in terms of number of cases. So number of cases up from 49 last week to 51 this week, and they did get down as low as 47, but they sort of trend upwards again, as with the number in hospital, which has gone up from 5 to 7. Number of deaths still zero, but number of deaths usually lags away behind the number in hospital, so that figure might also be climbing next week. So we're still far from over COVID. Those are Waikato-wide figures, so they gave up doing the Raglan ones a long time ago. So, yeah, we've got to 25 to 7, so maybe it's about time to have the bottom of the hour items, and then we'll listen to the mayor, and then we'll see if we can fit in a few more things and maybe listen to some of that music from Midge Marsden. So let's see how we get on with time. So bottom of the hour items first, and what we're going to get there, don't know. It's always, I think it's random that the computer picks which things it's going to play on the half hour and top of the hour ads, but here goes.
Nine. If you like random, I'm a grave digger. Lots of shenanigans and all of the topics, and not so random special guests and interviews, tune in Monday between 7 p.m.-ish and 8:30 p.m.-ish. Replayed on Thursday, primetime drive time, 5 p.m. till 6:30 p.m. for your weekly random rendezvous with Reza on
Raglan Community Radio.
RaglanRadio.com.
Soul of Whangaroa. Good sounds, good karma.
And you're listening to Raglan Talking Raglan on Raglan Community Radio, Rangio Whangarā, at 23 minutes to 7 o'clock. So another 53 minutes or so, Raglan Talking to Raglan to go, and let's listen to our Mayor, or Waikato District Mayor, Jackie Church, talking to our morning show host, Aaron, on Friday.
There's a few things been happening in the bigger picture for the district, and the biggest one probably is with the three water situation. Now, I know, for a bit of background, you have been having conversations with other mayors throughout the Waikato region, haven't you?
Yes.
About this topic and about working together, and then... This is something I've been reading press releases and trying to figure out what went on. It looks to me like Hamilton City decided they didn't really want to work with everyone else and they were going to go and start their own project and then maybe everyone can join them later on. But it felt like they wanted a little bit more control of things from my perspective.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm not privy to the internal thinking. What I do know is, I guess, you know, the Cranley report was probably 6 or 8 years ago now that we had in-depth discussions and cost quite a bit of money to look at the CCO, or Council-Controlled Organisation, between Waipa, Hamilton City Council, and ourselves. Mm. One of those things that probably didn't help was it actually went across an election rotation, because I think we're going to do these things, we have to do it with the same people and bring them along on the journey, obviously including our residents that ratepayers would affect. But unfortunately, that didn't go ahead with other councils pulling out of that. And if we had that, we would have been in a quite a different situation now when we retrospectively look at that going bigger in waters is a good idea. And you've got lots of examples internationally, like Scotland or Tasmania, et cetera, et cetera. And even, you know, Waterkill, when you see how that works, et cetera. So that's part of it. But now, as time's gone on with the different processes of governments looking at it, you know, we were down to really a Scottish model with the previous government, right? And then it was just like one entity, then it was split to four entities, then it went to 10 entities, and then we've had election change, and now we're with a new version of let's go and work together, you know, and but you have idea of more control. So, I mean, at the end of the day, what we're doing now is what we've always wanted to do, what we've always done, because we've been on this waters journey for closer to 10 years than anything else. So we're quite sophisticated in terms of understanding the infrastructure, our asset management, what needs to be done, our compliance or not compliance, what we need to do is upgrade our wastewater treatment plants, our water treatment plants, where the growth is, and the new consents that are all coming up quite a lot in the next 10 years, etc. Some other councils aren't perhaps as sophisticated as that, so it's about them bringing them up. So what we need to do and what we want to do is we see that we're looking at three separate options. One is to go alone as a CCO and do our own thing. That's one option that we're looking at. That we haven't done in the last 10 years because we've always sort of partnered up with Waterkia or and looked at that. But we've got to seriously consider that as an option. The second option is with Hamilton City Council. They wanted to see whether rather theirs, I think, is to go alone, as you said, or to go with us. Now, if that happened, we're about 50% of the Waikato District Council, Waikato Region as a whole, between the two of us, yep, in terms of population. So that's another model that we're looking at seriously, and we're sharing information and transparency about what their strengths and weaknesses are and how we can work together on that one. And the third option that we're looking at seriously is with the Waikato Waters Done Well, which has got, from memory, six or seven councils have said they want to work together, like, for instance, Manamana Piako, Hauraki, Thames Coromandel, and they're looking at a water services model to begin with, and that's and the intention is then to look at how a CCO or financial model might work out of that as it rolls on. But obviously, with more councils, then you've got to bring in the whole lot at the same time. So again, we are fully engaged with them as well, and we've basically agreed to non-binding alliances with both those models, both the Waters Done Well. We said we are wanting to look and investigate and go to the next stage with you, so we're fully informed and can make best decisions. And with Hamilton, same thing. We're fully engaged, and we're not just playing dance passes. We just seriously want to make sure that from a governance point of view, we make a really good decisions that are robust based on our many, many years of experience. And also we're really happy to share that experience that we've had, both with Watercare and the really great relationship we've had with Watercare over a long period of time in terms of water services. Mm. And then there's that financial part of actually how you leverage our balance sheet for debt. And that becomes affordability, right? If you can loan more money, you can get more things done which need to be done. I guess the caveat for me personally, which no one really talks about, Aaron, is obviously we all know when we get a loan, we pay it off in 10 years, we don't pay so much money in interest, right? But it's a higher cost per week for us to pay it back. But if we take that same debt over 30 years, then it's a more affordable weekly and we can afford to pay for it. But actually we pay a lot more over that 30 years in debt.
So can I ask
it's a difficult one around the quotation affordability for our people.
Yeah, so I had thought that part of the process with the three waters was the bigger the entity, the better we were off in terms of expertise and in terms of handling debt. So is that a priority of the council to be part of a fairly big, like that would, and that would mean going it alone really wasn't a very good option. So I'm just kind of asking around that.
Sure. I mean, I guess in chambers we can't presuppose what the outcome will be because they're still working on those three options. and so that's the outcome. But what we've seen over time is we've always sought other partners but that's part of policy of really trying to be a boundaryless district council to work cooperatively and collegially with other councils on many, many aspects of what we do. And so waters is just one part of that. And also waters is a very unique area of an industry. There's not so many experts, not like roading, but there's lots and lots of people who know about roading. It's less in that market. So obviously making sure that there's, when someone goes in as a young person, right, in their teenage years, that they can see that they've got a strong career path and et cetera. There's all sorts of ramifications of waters. Yeah, but because better, well, their models overseas, there's lots of them. People should go and have a look and see what they think themselves. That's where government was. Both governments are really sending us to say, sure, you can do it on your loan if you like, but what we've got here is we've got a huge geographic area in Waikato District Council. We've got nearly the same size as Auckland Super City. We're 80% of their size geographically. Hugely diverse amount of small, almost hamlet-sized communities, although we think they're quite big for our rural areas. But then also we've only got just under 90,000 people, every man, woman and child. But when we look at the waters, and Raglan's a prime example, in the water space, so that's 35,000 ratepayers of the whole of our district. So like Auckland Super City, for the same geographic area, they've got like nearly 2 million people. We haven't got 90,000. So there's a real difference in scale and difference in how to give the right levels of service that everybody wants and affordability. When it comes down to waters, only about half of our ratepayers are actually what we call reticulated or attached to town waters or drinking water and wastewater.
Yeah.
So it's only about 15,000 ratepayers. So an area the size of Auckland Super City, and we've only got 15,000 ratepayers paying for, what's the number, 17 wastewater and drinking water plants throughout our district. Mm. That's a huge amount for a very small amount of people. So Raglan's the same part of you are reticulated in the urban area, and quite close to the urban area, a lot of people on their own tanks and septic tanks.
So this is...
That's a real issue because we're not like Hamilton, who has basically every single of the 180,000 people who are actually paying for their waters.
So
this is one example of scale.
Yeah, so, I mean, the real question is, are we going to be crippled by debt? Because the whole thing that Labor was trying to do was to move the cost off ratepayers without putting it on government. They were trying something tricky with that. But this government has put it really back on ratepayers. So, I mean, this is quite threatening. I know there's one council over in the Bay of Plenty said, we're just literally not going to be able to keep up with standards with this approach. So like how threatening is this to us as it for the council to end up under too much debt?
Sure. So there's the parts of it that is waters are really important because we're actually made of water, right? Majority. So the waters are absolutely key to us as human beings and all growth, whether it's industrial and et cetera. When you think of who's going to pay, actually we all pay, whether it's the taxpayers paying under the Labor government, right? Because basically the Labor government's going to support us as ratepayers being paying. So we either would have less police or less education or less roads. There's only so much money in the pot of New Zealand Inc. And it's either taxpayer money that goes into particular services that they provide, or it's ratepayer money that comes out of the local government to pay for those things. Their aspiration was that it made waters more affordable across the nation because there was more spread of that of taxpayer money. But it doesn't mean that there's a magic pie. If the pie's $100 for everything in New Zealand, whether it's waters or crime or police or education, there's only $100, and somewhere there's got to be a squeeze, right? But it did make it. That was the vision of equitability, perhaps. It's just one of another word. The national government wants us to be as efficient as possible and to look at amalgamations or the best possible model that works for our council, and that may be CCOs or not, and to also they're encouraged with their debt funding to go, okay, the under Local Government Act, we can only borrow so much money, and that's a really good thing to make sure that us local government do the right things by our citizens and don't, add too much debt. So there's checks and balances within the system. But when it comes to waters, they are extraordinarily expensive, and the compliance is extraordinarily expensive. And and what they were giving us is the ability to leverage the amount of debt that we can, 350% or 500%, to make it affordable over time. And that's their model, and that's what we're looking for at the moment, is how we can best utilise this. Now, obviously, when you ask people, and this is my personal opinion on this is not council, so I just want to clear the air on that one.
Yeah.
What I say to people around waters is, if you say to people, would you like a healthy river? Yes, absolutely. The environment's key. Would you like good drinking water? Yes. And do you want to make sure that there's not contamination of the environment by wastewater? Yes. Okay. What we don't ask people is, at what level do we want it? I'm a girl. I'm sorry I have to describe it like this. I describe it like, do we want a mini miner version of it, like the basic no labels in the supermarket, or do we want the Ford motor car, or do we want the Mercedes model of that? Well, these are the costs for this level of compliance and this level of service across our waters. So when we just literally ask people and don't treat them like adults, in my opinion, we don't, is to say, yes, we want healthy rivers, absolutely want good environment, yes, we want clean drinking water, but to what standard? Because this costs this much at that standard, and this costs that much at that standard, and that costs that at that standard. What can we afford? What do we want? And who's going to pay? So I believe, because we just talk about a number. We don't even talk about that number. But obviously, we need regulations. They're really important. I think this government's understanding is they're looking at how the, same with the Reserve Management Act, whether they can make that a smoother operation. And then things like fast tracking so that the consents can come through faster, because obviously, the longer things take and the more in depth they have to be, then it's a more cost back to the communities and that to the ratepayers.
So, can I come back to the question, though? As a rural community, it's harder for us to cope with the debt load because you talk about how everything's spread out. But as a rural community, we're completely essential to the country because that's where all the farms are, and that's sometimes called farms the backbone of the country. But our councils are going to have a lot harder time with this than the big cities because of those issues of economy of scale and the amount of network you need in these spread out districts.
Yeah, we're probably the exemplar of how spread out and the our community.
Exactly.
But also because we touch on a lot with Raglan and many other. We're a tier one growth district council. We're one of the fastest growing district councils in New Zealand, and that's the truth. And that has implications in terms of affordability and things as well. And they just say the rural area, they've got their septic tanks and water supplies. But water is at the moment is not sustainable. And in fact, even I'm just thinking back here with my brain, 2018 and 2021 particularly, we always focus on the general rate that local government's going to discuss with and present for consultation with our ratepayers. But when you look over the 10 years of the targeted rate of the escalation of cost of the waters, the three waters for people who are reticulated, the numbers get mind-boggling per ratepayer by the time you get to year 10. Now, you know, they're mind-boggling, you know, $4,500 to $5,000 or $6,000 by the time you get year 10. Now, if we're 3 years into the LTP, that's only 7 years away. The numbers are it's not sustainable. That's why we've got to find ways of making it more sustainable for either how we regulate it, what our compliance is, what the consents are, where the government helps with funding, but then if the government helps with funding, they've got to take it off the taxpayer somewhere else.
But it is, there's an advantage.
It's very complex.
It is advantageous, though, for to spread it out across the whole country and for the government to do it. They also have better capacity for borrowing money. So I think putting it on small councils, I mean, that's what I've been trying to get at. Like, this is not good for us as a small council with everything spread out.
Yeah, and that's why, yeah, like, and I guess, Aaron, the short answer for you is we understand about that complexity and those opportunities and of scale as well, all right? I can't tell you, and no one can at the moment, where our council will land, but trust that, you know, we've done a lot of due diligence over the last 10 years, and this new council, because we've got 9 new councils, have been here 2 years, I've made sure that right from the beginning, they've been well educated of waters, and we have like fortnightly meetings because there's a lot moving at the moment, and it's really important that we make the right decision and people are fully informed about those decisions, and we're making sure that we've got alternatives to fully investigate for that. Scale does help for a variety of reasons, but you know, a single one on the CCO is an option, and then we must also look at that option as well.
Okay, all right, let's tie this in because to the long term plan, because next year. It's a pretty significant long-term plan that has to be settled on, and you guys are working on that at the moment. But and we're getting lots of signals from you guys that it's going to be very hard to continue with business as usual for councils. Like, that's kind of my summary of the message we're getting from you guys. Is that? Would you agree with that?
I think everybody is aware of affordability of our citizens, all right? And therefore, we either... And actually, at the moment, we've said, and obviously we had to do an enhanced annual plan last year rather than the year one of the LTP because of waters. All right.
Yep.
So now we have to go and do the whole thing again. We were actually two-thirds of the way through the LTP when we had to change anyway. So we've done a lot of that work. Now, what we're saying at the moment in our annual plan is that this year we're looking at 6% and 6% for year two and year three. Now, obviously, we're looking at the affordability of people for general rates, and we're looking at what services and what changes have happened in the last 6 months to a year that might change those rates, whether we can reduce it down, but then if we reduce it down, what services that we had said and what projects that we had promised and levels of service and maintenance that we had said that we were going to do that will we not do? So it's kind of easy to say, we're going to try and cut our cloth, we're trying to look at in the crevices, but also the assumption that's I think in the media a lot, and I personally it's a story, is that local government sits there and does nothing, all right? And all of a sudden someone tells us we should be looking under the bonnet and checking things out. We have in this council, and I say that with confidence over the last 12 years I've been here, we look under the bonnet of our district council and the operation of it and always looking for savings and ways we can do things faster and better. As a new mayor, I have focused on that because how the business operates, the effectiveness of it, is better for all outcomes, for all residents, and all of our communities. And that we should always be looking for the best way and effective way and lowering roadblocks. But on the other hand, people have not just needs, they have wants and they have aspirations. And that's across a lot of variety of areas. And everyone wants their thing and they're quite happy to have their thing, but not somebody else's thing. So we have to look at it with transparency, with criticality, and looking at the facts, looking at the empirical data, and looking at where we have the resources and spread them as equitably over time as we can across our district and our ratepayers. So that there's and also looking at things like where the growth nodes are and where we have those pinch points. So for example, Raglan would be a pinch point because you have this. You've got about under 4,000 people in terms of population as residents, so you're quite small in terms of the population of the city, but then you're 300 or 400% increases over the summer, but then the summer's becoming longer for you,
yep.
So those pressures. So we think that we've got a really good cohesive understanding of you and partnership with you as a area, and then we're trying our best to work with developers with growth coming in, and obviously with your community, amazing community board, your councillor, and local groups, and to work with you on that. Other areas the same. So some are not as sophisticated in terms of their own, you know, like you've got your Raglan Naturally, for example. Other communities are just starting to get that sustainability and adaptability in their own around how they can actually affect change for themselves, by themselves. And we're trying to nurture that adaptability and resilience in the communities and managing growth as well.
Okay.
But, you know, we've got towns that are larger all over. So it's kind of, it's like you're not going to miss, because I think one of the things that happens is everyone feels there's a lack. And yes, there is a lack, because if we want to throw money at it, but the money, there is no secret, you know, Santa bag, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I will be, and I do, focus on making sure that we do the right things in the right time. And also, if we promise something, that we actually deliver it, and we try and deliver it on time and on budget. And if we've already promised things and we're going to do a catch-up, which we are because we've over-promised or under-delivered, then that's out of integrity, in my opinion. So we're going to do what we say we're going to do and do it as effectively as possible.
Okay. Can we move to Māori ward seats?
Sure.
I think our council, you guys have decided to go for – there's only two options. Go for the vote option.
Yes.
Yep.
Because the other option is not sustainable for us, that we just – say no to Māori ward seats, so we have to. The only alternative is to go to a referendum. Yes.
Yeah. So what's your kind of position on that as the mayor? Like, what have you said about it?
I guess actions speak louder than words, in my opinion. So I guess the first day I came in as mayor, and my first four-hour conversation with the senior leadership team was, I said, "Well, can we make a note? Because I'd like to ask at that time Kingi Tuheitia whether we could put his portrait into the chambers." And I wanted to ask that, and we were fortunate that in May of 2023 that happened, and his sister came along to represent him, and also the Tumanaki, which is the person who crowns the Queen, Honey Thompson, and Reverend Moxon from the Anglican Bishop. They all came, and we had a ceremony where we had King Charles's portrait put up as a new king, I guess, in the Windsor one, and then also had King Tuheitia's portrait up in our chambers. Now, what I've been told, I did it because I felt that that's important for the integrity of who we are and what we are and where we are, and my relationship with Mana Whenua as well, and where the future of NZ and Aotearoa is. What I've heard back from various kaumātua is that was really important to them that happened. I just think it was an integrity thing for me, but because I didn't think of the political, what it means, but they think that was a good thing to do. So I think we're the only council that has done that. So that's, I guess, in the statement where that hasn't been, that's the statement in our chambers. It was a community space where we all can be in, where decisions are made, and we have that oversight.
So, okay, let me ask another question around that. Because we've had a term now with two Māori ward seats, I call them seats. And so it seems to me a bit of fear behind the opposition to those seats. And I'm wondering from your perspective, if you're meeting people now and they're kind of like, well, we've had it for a little while and it's not as, they won't say it this way, but it's not as frightening as they thought it was going to be, or everything, you know, everything's just been okay, it's been fine. Do you think when we come to a vote that any insight into which way the vote will go?
Sure, big questions. I agree with you. I think Aaron, and it's really thoughtful of you, I think most people in their lives fear what they don't know or the things that are unknown, whether it's, I'm not sure if I want to jump out of that plane with a parachute on, okay, or I'm moving to another country, or what's that going to be like? You know, we have... And fear over time or worries has kept us, you know, survival mode. So I guess we don't know things, but if we open our minds and go, okay, maybe I'll try that, or maybe I'm going to read a bit more about this subject, you know, before I jump out of a plane kind of idea, or about Māori wards or whatever, or have I never been to Māori, maybe I learned some history of Aotearoa, which, you know, unfortunately, people my age and even yours, we didn't get educated in our schools about our own history, which I think was a real opportunity lost by all governments and all parties, and now that's been changed, so that we'll have a much better idea for our children as to our nation. So I think with anything that we fear or worry about or concerned about or not sure of, the best thing is to kind of go to the library and check out a couple of books, or, you know, maybe not the internet, because sometimes that can send you down algorithm rabbit holes, but there's lots of data around, right? And what I really like about Mana Whenua, because I've been on the Manais probably about 10 years myself, and just sitting there quietly and, you know, just to understand and putting that action there rather than speaking into that space, but just to sit in there and show that I was interested. Is the word manaakitanga, and so most people know the word mana, mana being leadership or your natural star quality or your natural control, leadership. Manaakitanga is such a, you know, a precept of the Vimana. It's like a mana of being very hospitable to all guests and showing that hospitality. Now, hospitality is one of the things that New Zealanders do so well, right? And it's something that we've got in common with all of our peoples of New Zealand, that we like to be very hospitable to all people. And that's part of their really deep part of their culture, how I understand it. And I really value that they really make an effort when new people are around to support them and be hospitable. And so I think that's a really great thing. So, yeah, step into that space, ask some questions, read a few books. Yeah.
So,
and you know, be less scary for people.
So, but are you getting a feeling from the people you meet about where they sit on this?
I think I feel I remember actually elderly gentleman in the north, and he was saying that his granddaughter, he was really encouraged because he said my granddaughter is learning to Māori language, is how he said it, in preschool, and he said some of the words that she's saying I can't understand, so I've just decided that I don't understand I want to understand because I love my granddaughter, so I'm going to spend more time with her and understand the language with her. And so I think those steps of people, most people are really open, they're always curious, and I believe that as a nation we'll step forward into that, and I see the Waikato District Council has been really intrinsic to that movement forward of future-proofing New Zealand Inc. Aotearoa for the future of how we've got the multinational countries in the world, and with our Te Tiriti o Waitangi.
Okay. Before we wrap up, I know you've been having some visits from ministers from the government recently, and they've been talking about fast-track projects. I think this is what I've heard. I sort of understand. Now, here in Raglan, of course, we're upset about the seabed mining thing, but and I've talked about that earlier this morning, so putting that aside, what else have you been talking to the ministers about?
Sure, we actually had Minister Bishop online yesterday with Future Proofs, Waikato District Council, Hamilton Waipa, and Manawa Piako. So it's Future Proofs. It's like, again, the powerhouse growth councils, or the three plus Manawa Piako is not so fast growing, but those three councils, fastest growing in the region. So Minister Bishop came, we've had a half an hour with him and talked about the fast-tracking things that they were put into the Waikato. He says it's a focus of theirs. They see the synchronicity between the Golden Triangle, basically, the Auckland, which I hadn't actually heard this from government, so I was really pleased to hear that from them, because I keep saying it to them, but now he's saying it back, where he's, Minister of Infrastructure, it's really important, and housing, very important. And so he says that synchronicity of Auckland, Waikato, and Tauranga, and we get that right, and central government gets that right, Aotearoa succeeds. And so that's a good focus, because not just focusing on the big metropolitan cities, and we feel like we all missed out in our rural and provincial district council, we're aligning ourselves as our five different councils to make sure that we work really well together, as well as those other councils in that area for the 11 that we are, that's a 10 district. Nine district councils, one city, and one regional council, and showing that we're working as well together as we possibly can for the betterment of the people. And that's the message to government. And so Minister Bishop was really pleased. He said, unlike other areas, which I won't name, he said, who are kind of infighting with each other a little bit more, he says he sees that collegiality and the working together that we're doing, and they like that. They want that. They want that balanced industry looking and the strategic. What's good for, and we keep saying to ourselves and our five mayors, and that future proof is, what's good for one of our district councils or the city is good for all of us, because we have a very symbiotic relationship. And Raglan, same as you, like, although you're part of Waikato District Council, rural and provincial, but the segue between you and Hamilton is such a close tie, and vice versa, in terms of business, economics, tourism, schooling, health, all sorts of things, and, holidaying or whatever. So those are things that we're building on, and the government likes that and wants to support that. And so there's more things coming out. You also see, obviously, the spillage from Auckland. They see that as a real opportunity for us in the North Waikato. So for us, it's key, because we can be the segue for the other mighty Waikato, and that's how I've always seen it. Sure, we've got to look after our citizens, but we also got to see the impacts of our boundary list and those impacts on Auckland that are good for economic development, for other opportunities that come, tourism, and industry as well, and then also off to the east in Tauranga. The better we can work together in that NZ Inc., in that Golden Triangle, the better it is for our short, medium and long term.
So it's nice that he's saying that, but spillover from Auckland isn't a government policy that does – they're not putting any money down, let's say. So are they putting any money down for our region?
Well, no money anywhere. Spillover also not just Auckland border. Spillover in Auckland and spillover obviously around the Hamilton as well, and some of those around the Peacock, for example, there was a lot of focus on those for fast tracking. So, we didn't get any money for a Huntly wastewater treatment plant, but they put it on the fast tracking. The Peacock is no money, but fast tracking. Fast tracking some development for more housing because we need to take the heat out of the housing market, etc. Basically, my understanding, and you're probably more better up to this than this than me, Aaron, is the government saying they've got a problem. They've got no money in the bank, and they need to tighten their belts, and everyone's got to tighten their belts and get us back humming, and we need to get up the confidence of business, and we need to get the GDP, the gross domestic product, where we make more, and therefore the pie is not $100, but it comes $105 or $110, so there is actually more money because we're all more productive. That's the only way we can do it. Otherwise, we're just carving up the pie in different ways of, do we pay for medical, do we pay for waters, do we pay for education? We can't keep debt funding, we can't keep getting that. So that's the other thing, is tightening about. There is no money, and they don't give us any money. What we're doing is saying, being thankful and building up a relationship with central government to show that we're collegial and know what we're doing, and we've got the plan short, medium and long term in here, and we know what we're doing, and give them the confidence to work with us, not just the big metropolitans. And that's really important, that relationship of confidence, and showing that we can actually, when we do something and say something, we actually deliver it, which comes back that, we know what we're doing. And then as and when we anticipate over time, short, medium or long term, there will be funds that will become available for various things through government as they are, because it all comes around in, ebbs and flows, that we are ready, because we've built up that confidence with them, to be able to capitalise on those for the citizens. In the meantime, it's, put the hoods down, hunker down, do the best we can, continue to do our, innovation, continue to do our cost savings, continue to navigate the ship that who we are and where we're going. Because remember, we know where we're going up to Growth 2070. We've got a 50-year plan of where we know that our district council needs to go.
Okay,
and same with all
right.
The other councils. So we know where we're going. Governments, because, sometimes on this three-year cycle, are kind of floating quite a bit. So we want to show them, actually, we know where the ship's going. We know where the Golden Triangle's going. We know where the whole Waikato's going. And short, medium, long term. So get on board. Don't reinvent the wheel, because we actually know that we can help and support your outcomes together rather than being adversarial to each other or someone in Wellington deciding what we want for Raglan.
I'm glad that you're being collegial with them. But the things that they're saying, that's the talk of austerity. So
It's tough.
Yeah, and it's, we haven't got time for a debate about that. We're not going to get into that, but austerity usually doesn't end well for a lot of people on the bottom half of the heap. But we have run out of time. I've got another interview waiting for me. So, Jackie, thank you for your time this morning, and we'll talk to you again in a few months, I understand.
We didn't hear the response to that, but hopefully we will. So that was our Mayor Jackie Church talking to our morning show host, Aaron. And you're listening to Raglan Talking Raglan on Raglan Community Radio, Rangiora Whangaroa at 7:10, so 10 minutes late, top of the hour, then have a look at a few other council items.
This week at the Harvey Hotel, Monday $20 muscle pot, Tuesday trivia night and $10 air special, Wednesday pizza special, 20% off any pizza, 5 plate, Thursday jackpot draw $200, Thursday tea travel and burger meal for $30, Pitos and pina coladas for $10, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, brunch night for $2. Here you go. We look forward to welcoming you and yours for a great time in Raglan at the Harbour View Hotel.
Starting a landscaping project or just need ideas? Come and see us at Raglan Landscape Supplies. We have all the landscaping products you need, from stones to sleepers, sand to bark, drainage metals to builder's mix, pavers to compost. We even have a plant nursery. We deliver to your door. We have free customer loan trailers. We also hire out a post-hole borer, concrete mixer, compactor and water blaster.
Please check out our website, www.raglanlandscapesupplies.co.nz. We are at 140 Tomato Road. Look for the big green wheelbarrow or ring 825-0577.
Hey, I'm hungry. What do you want for dinner?
Oh, let's go down to the growers' market, Mum. There's always something yummy there, and we can get all our veggies and fruit for the week at the same time.
Great idea. All the produce is grown locally, which means that because it's super fresh, it's more nutritious.
I love hanging out at the growers' market.
And I love meeting all the growers. I'll grab the bag with our reusable containers.
Don't forget our bowls and spoons.
The Raglan Growers' Market. Hi. By the community, for the community. Every Friday from 5 to 7pm on Stewart Street.
Support local. See you there.
Raglan Community Radio supports the Raglan Food Bank.
The food bank can be found at 36 Bow Street opposite the Community House and is open for business between 1 and 3 Mondays and Fridays.
Donations can be dropped off at these times or at Super Value.
Check out the food bank's current needs on our sign at the Super Value entrance or online at surfside.co.nz.
Or find out more about the Surfside Community Services, Food Bank and Counselling Services by phoning 825 5199.
The Raglan Food Bank. Raglan's only true community bank.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends.
Raglan Community Radio is celebrating 30 years on air. 2008 to 2012. 2008.
A 20-year license is approved by the government. Paperwork is boring and raising money is hard work, but we've secured our future for the next 20 years.
2009.
Another year of crisis in the station as bad vibes bring everyone down. Some DJs even leave to set up on a rival frequency.
2010.
Should we stay or should we go? We're down to only a small number of DJs and the committee has to decide whether to close the station or not. Luckily, they chose to stay.
2011.
The committee puts in the hours and creates a new vision of the station while technicians introduce climate control to our transmitter shed, and we managed to stay on the air through the entire summer.
2012.
Raglan Community Radio gets a paid staff member for the first time ever. His first job is to start the morning show on a shoestring budget.
This is not the BBC.
I hope you find it reassuring it's not the BBC. Now you're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio. Here are Angel Fangara at what's the time? Just coming up to 7:15. So council's been looking at quite a number of things in the last week or so. I did mention the airfield report earlier, but they've also been looking at quite a number of other things. There's also meetings which are coming up, and usually we get the agenda for the Waters Governance Board, the group that liaises between council and water care and looks at what's happening with our water supply, sewage and stormwater. And that's coming up in a week's time, next Tuesday. But they've got the agenda on the council's website already. And there was a meeting online last week talking about progress with the sewage upgrade, looking at the possibility or the, what seems now to be quite a likelihood of discharging the treated waste onto Winery Reserve and the gully just south of the pine forest there. There was a mention of it being a placebo, and I was not too sure what that meant, but that they are going to do a public presentation next month and also a drop-in, so we'll all have a chance to question what they mean by placebo. And they also mentioned that they're finishing the upgrade of the sewage works by December and hope to have it all tested and operational by next June. So that's good progress. In the agenda that's coming up for next week, they also mention a new perimeter security fence around it. And say that it's going to be in three stages around the lower pond, the upper pond, and the new solar farm area, that work's going to start later this month. And that they're going to also do the final effluent pond discharge point railings, because The rail provides a safety barrier for staff working on the pond level instrument and outlet pipe. And the installation follows an operator slipping and a risk assessment of the event. An upgrade for staff safety there. And it says also that the various upgrades at the sewage works will return the plant to the compliance with the resource management consent that it has. They also say that the INLEX work platform's being built up, the screening equipment installation is going to follow, and the building fit out is progressing, the mechanical pipework and control panel fabrication continues, and the land contact discharge through a planted area is being further developed, which is what I just mentioned. And further technical assessments are underway. So it's still not certain that that's going to happen on Winery Reserve, but they're certainly moving ahead with it. They do say that on stormwater, the stormwater swale rain garden maintenance hasn't been fully completed. They've also not held the annual meeting, which was due back in June, I think it was. And so that's overdue. And again, breach of their resource consent. But they do mention that they're replacing the 23 catch pit inserts, the EnviroPods that we've got in Raglan. That's in all of our those gullies that you see on the side of the road where the rainwater is supposed to pour in, and the EnviroPods are supposed to catch all the rubbish and stop it floating out to sea. So those have been replaced. We've also got a catchment management plan for Raglan being scoped to be undertaken in 24-25, which is the financial year that we're in at the moment. So hopefully we'll hear a bit more about that. They say it will consolidate the known and potential fish barriers, including high-level details on remediation projects. So that will hopefully allow the fish to go up the streams where currently some of the stormwater pipes don't let them at the moment. There's also been a few other council meetings going on. So as I mentioned, the aerodrome workshop, so it's looking at closing the aerodrome next year and handing it back to the Hapu. They also mentioned that the annual income from the airfield is $4,400 a year, and the grounds maintenance and aviation advisor costs are $15,500 on average a year. And I'm surprised at those figures, because they were talking about $30,000 not very long ago. But anyway, there's still quite a difference between income of just over $4,000 and expenditure of rather more than $15,000. So I think on most counts, the council would be keen to close that just because it was making a loss. But because it's an aerodrome, it seems to be allowed to continue, which has always been a puzzle to me, but it looks as though we're moving to a solution on that one anyway. Council's also been looking at the what they're calling the crime prevention cameras, the closed circuit television. And they're proposing that there should be four in the CBD area and another one out at Tiuku and another one out at Manu Bay. So hopefully that's going to see rather more progress than we have for quite a while. All these things are in council reports. So if you're interested in seeing more detail on these, go to those council reports. I can't find an awful lot of detail on the CCTV ones. They've got a map, which is a very vague map, which shows those figures that I just mentioned. They also had a alcohol control bylaw workshop. And so they're looking at increasing the area covered by the alcohol control during the summer. Increasing it out to the wharf in one direction and a single lane bridge in the other direction. So all the area in between would be covered by the alcohol control bylaw, and they're also thinking of extending it not just from the beginning of January, but right through to the 10th of February. So no doubt we'll see some proposals on that eventually. They say it's a proposal from both the police and from the staff, council staff, to both extend the area and extend the period. And they mention the number of complaints. So Ragland had the highest number of complaints as a proportion of the total. 26.6% of the 722 complaints across the district between 2019 and 2023, they were 26%, almost 27% came from Raglan alone. Of course, we haven't got anywhere near the 26% of the district's population. So, but they also mention it does increase in December and January. So I think there's a hint there that maybe it's not locals that are totally responsible for it, but maybe visitors as well. Apparently 10 complaints were of drinking in public places or safety, and 6 about Freedom Campers. And they also talk about there was another meeting which council had today talking about enabling housing supply. Unfortunately, public's excluded from that, so you can only guess at what they might be covering in that. But they do have somebody who's an expert on transport there, and somebody else who was one of the planners. So I'm guessing that they're looking at various changes that they might do in that direction to enable housing supply. No, I've already covered that. Any other things? I think maybe that was it. I had loads of other things to tell you about, but I've just realised that I've come to the end of that list. So, but as I say, if you're interested in any of the detail of those, have a look on the council's website and have a look at the meetings which are coming up, and you'll see the various proposals in there. They're also say that I should just coming back to the stormwater that I was mentioning earlier. They've got Wainui Environmental Limited and Tamiro Water Limited engaged to develop a Raglan Township stormwater strategy and water quality improvement project, looking particularly at improving the water quality in Bow Street and Stewart Street, which of course close to the CBD. And looking at how it might cope with floods and with quality and all that sort of thing. So hopefully that will come up at this rather delayed meeting that was supposed to happen in June. We've reached 25 past seven. I think I've covered all that I've actually got down at the moment. So if you have been, thanks for listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan. If you haven't, then I'm hoping I'm going to manage to do Raglan Talking Raglan next week, but it's not a certainty because I'm not quite sure where I'm going to be next week at this time. So it could be that might be a couple of weeks before I manage to talk to you again on Raglan Talking Raglan. But as I say, hopefully it'll be 6-ish till 7:30-ish again on Raglan Talking on Raglan Community Radio next week. So if you have been, thanks for listening. If you haven't, then let's see what we can do about getting the music going again. And of course, we've got another show coming up in just less than 5 minutes' time. So let's see what we can do. We've got Neil Young lined up with Hitchhiker. Oh, and I still not managed to fit in that song from Midge Marsden. Let's see if we can quickly resolve that one. And where's Midge Marsden got to? I'm sure he's on here somewhere. Raglan music, that looks promising. Used to be possible to find these things quickly, but I'm not sure that it is now, because they all used to be in a convenient list. But they are still in a convenient list. So, yeah, here's Midge Marsden with Burning Rain. Yes, Burning Rain from Midge Marsden. So, here it goes.
where's it all leading? There's people hungry and there's people bleeding. They keep the money in a concrete building. They've got us looking in the wrong direction. Look around you, but all the strife. We're all on the train and there's no one driving. Carve it up smaller and sell it again. A few more dollars for the band.